I'm Tara Mergener. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, making a point, the Trump administration stands behind its strike on Iran's nuclear sites as the Supreme Leader speaks out for the first time since the bombardment. The path forward, Republicans find difficulty coming to an agreement over the president's big, beautiful bill. We're on Capitol Hill. Critical decision. Supreme Court rules against Planned Parenthood in a Medicaid funding dispute. We have analysis. And
just the kindness on his face and just a charity about him that just moved me.
We speak with Jonathan Rumi after the cast and crew of The Chosen spends time at the Vatican. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
And thank you for being with us on the feast day of St. Jose Maria Escriva, the founder of Opus Dei. I'm Tara Mergener, our top story tonight. A major decision today out of Washington, where the Supreme Court has ruled that states can block Medicaid funding from going to Planned Parenthood. Judges issued their ruling today on Medina versus Planned Parenthood, South Atlantic, in a 6-3 decision. What it means is that an individual or group cannot sue a state for blocking Medicaid funds from going to Planned Parenthood. The case stems from 2018, and that's when South Carolina's governor, Henry McMaster, directed the State Department of Health and Human Services to exclude Planned Parenthood from the Medicaid program. Federal law generally bars the use of Medicaid funds for abortions. However, Governor McMaster reasoned that Planned Parenthood could still use the Medicaid money that was received for other purposes to fund its abortion practices. The state was then sued by Planned Parenthood and an individual woman. However, today's ruling said that even though Medicaid recipients have a right to choose their own providers, it's not a right enforceable in court. And to discuss this issue further, we'd like to bring on John Mai, CEO of Americans United for Life. John, thank you for joining us. Why is this decision so important?
Thanks for having me on, Tara. This is a monumental decision for the pro-life movement and for Americans and for conscientious objections of states that really have voted to affirm life and to avoid the harm of abortion violence. Inciting with Medina and the state of South Carolina, the Supreme Court has essentially handed a win to authentic women's health care. And the reason why this is such a monumental decision is because the implications are not only in South Carolina, but it opens the door for every pro-life state in this country to begin to dismantle all Medicaid funding for Planned Parenthood within their states. And that's a really big deal, considering that Planned Parenthood makes hundreds of millions of dollars in Medicaid funding from the government every single year. This is a big decision, Tara.
And obviously, as you said, it's a big deal for the pro-life movement. So what do you think will happen now with that? What kind of momentum is that going to build?
So after this ruling, it opens the door for other states to do exactly what South Carolina has done, in that they now have the ability to restrict funds, and Planned Parenthood essentially cannot go to federal court to contest this. So now these resources from Medicaid can be diverted to life-affirming social safety net care, such as federally qualified health centers and charitable clinics that provide really good health care and, quite frankly, have a much broader and better network to serve women in need as opposed to Planned Parenthood.
So we've got about 60 seconds left. If Planned Parenthood were to be able to show that any Medicaid money goes toward things unrelated to abortion, could they start receiving funding again?
No. And the thing is, so money is fungible. So even if they're providing services in other areas, as long as they continue to provide abortion services, they will reap the benefits of that Medicaid funding. And while it can't be directly applied to abortion, they certainly can take the funds that they've received in other areas and apply that to their abortion business, which is by far the largest percentage of their business. So as long as they continue to provide abortion services, the state is under no obligation to fund them through their Medicaid program.
All right, John, certainly a big moment for the pro-life movement. Thanks for joining us.
Yep, thank you for having me. God bless.
Well, Florida Representative Kat Kamick was forced to evacuate her congressional office last night after death threats were made against her, her family, and her staff. The pro-life Republican says she has been a repeat victim of threats after she spoke about the challenges she faced getting treatment for a life-threatening ectopic pregnancy. In Florida, strict abortion laws have made health care providers cautious, leading to confusion over what constitutes permissible emergency care. Following her health crisis, Kamick publicly criticized Democrats in a Wall Street Journal article asserting that health care providers' confusion stems from a political campaign to generate fear. She claims that this uncertainty, rather than the law itself, endangered her life. Kamick says, since the article, we've received thousands of hate-filled messages and dozens of credible threats from pro-abortion activists, which law enforcement is actively investigating. She went on to say, let me be clear, I will not be intimidated. I won't back down in the fight for women and families. President Donald Trump calls it one of the greatest news conferences he has ever seen. His defense secretary blasting the press, accusing them of hunting for scandals, while also describing the American attack on Iran as, quote, resounding success. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
Tara, the president and his defense secretary not holding back at all on how they feel the American attack on Iran has been covered in the news.
At the Pentagon, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth addresses reporters.
Because of decisive military action, President Trump created the conditions to end the war, decimating, choose your word, obliterating, destroying Iran's nuclear capabilities.
American forces on Sunday hit three Iranian nuclear facilities with bunker buster bombs and cruise missiles. The news conference, held to respond to an early leaked intelligence report, a preliminary assessment from DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, suggesting U.S. strikes against Iran likely put the country back mere months. The defense secretary blasting the press corps over its coverage.
Because you cheer against Trump so hard, it's like in your DNA and in your blood to cheer against Trump, because you want him not to be successful so bad, you have to cheer against the efficacy of these strikes.
His boss, President Donald Trump, writing on Truth Social, rumor is that the failing New York Times and fake news CNN will be firing the reporters who made up the fake stories on the Iran nuclear sites because they got it so wrong. Let's see what happens. Also at the news briefing, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff describing in detail the attacks on Fordo, explaining how the weapons did what they were built to do, arriving at their intended targets, and then what pilots witnessed.
And we know that the trailing jets saw the first weapons function, and the pilots stated, quote, this was the brightest explosion that I've ever seen. It literally looked like daylight.
In the White House briefing room, Caroline Leavitt telling reporters,
with President Trump as commander-in-chief, the world is a much safer place.
Meanwhile, Iran's supreme leader says his country has delivered a hand slap to America's face with a strike on an American base in Qatar and warned against any further U.S. attacks on Iran.
We saw the Ayatollah's video, and when you have a totalitarian regime, you have to save face. I think any common sense, open-minded person knows the truth about the precision strikes on Saturday night. They were wildly successful.
Today, Secretary Hegseth also praised the incredible pilots, refuelers, and air defenders who he says accomplished their mission in that strike on Iran's nuclear program. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, and for more, we turn to Andrea Stricker, Deputy Director of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy's Nonproliferation and Biodefense Program. Andrea, great to be with you. There really seems to be some debate over how effective were these strikes on the three Iranian nuclear facilities. What are you hearing? And, you know, was this a major blow or not?
Great to be with you, Tara. I think it was a significant blow. By my estimate, just from my technical background and studying the program for around 18 years, I would say that their atomic weapons capability, their route and timeline to make a weapon is likely set back by 2 years. And then if they were to want to recover all that they've lost in terms of the three enrichment facilities, conversion, and the weaponization capabilities, they would likely require many, many years. And I think what we're seeing is these estimates are going to end up coalescing around a longer timeline and greater impact on the Iranian program.
Can anyone conclusively tell where the program actually stands when Iran refuses to allow in IAEA inspectors?
That's an important question. And I think if the Trump administration is thinking about negotiating a new deal, it should actually give Iran a list of terms. And those terms need to be that you let the IAEA inspectors, the UN nuclear watchdog, back in, give over all of the missing nuclear material if it's not already entombed in these sites below ground, and fully dismantle permanently all the nuclear weapons, nuclear fuel production, and missile delivery capabilities.
You know, we're hearing a lot about the preliminary assessment from the DIA, or the Defense Intelligence Agency. How was that assessment compiled?
They compiled those using mostly the imagery that they have and then the intelligence that they have from human sources or signals up until that point. And when you're talking about just a day or 2 days to compile all of that information, it's going to be naturally limited. And you're not going to know, for example, what happened around 90 meters below ground at the Fordow enrichment site. So I think we will see more stringent assessments coming out in the days and the weeks ahead.
So, Andrea, what do you think comes next in the push to restrict or eliminate Iran's nuclear capabilities?
I think if Iran wants to maintain the ceasefire, then it needs to let the IAEA back in and fully dismantle everything that it has. Otherwise, we're going to see the United States and Israel likely having to take additional strikes to ensure militarily that this program is finished for good.
And very quickly, what other countries are of concern when it comes to these nuclear weapons? Should we be keeping an eye on North Korea or even China and Russia at this point?
Certainly, we need to be concerned about the use of nuclear weapons by any of our adversaries. And they are cooperating in this new axis of aggressors, China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran. And we need to orient our policies and our nuclear weapons capacities to deter them from any attacks on the U.S. homeland.
All right. Andrea Stricker from the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies and an expert on nuclear weapons proliferation. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, the war in Gaza rages on as the Israeli military says several of its soldiers were killed when a Palestinian attached a bomb to their armored vehicle. This comes as Palestinian health officials say dozens are dead over the last day in Gaza. Many of them were killed while trying to access aid. Palestinian witnesses say Israeli forces have repeatedly opened fire on crowds heading towards food. Meanwhile, the people of Gaza hope a ceasefire deal can be achieved soon to end the bloodshed. President Trump held an event at the White House this afternoon calling on Republicans to support the so-called Big Beautiful Bill. This is the road ahead for the signature legislation for the president's agenda seems rocky. The president says the measures will remarkably improve the economy.
And according to the Council of Economic Advisers, these reforms will protect or create more than 7 million jobs, add 3.1% to economic growth, reduce taxes for the typical American by nearly 15%, and increase take-home pay for the normal family of four by at least $13,000. And that takes place immediately.
Major developments on Capitol Hill. Senate Republicans said they may delay hundreds of billion dollars in Medicaid cuts in the Big Beautiful Bill to win over GOP moderate holdouts. But several House Republicans say that's not going to fly, along with other changes to the Senate they intend to make. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us with the latest developments. Eric.
Well, good evening, Tara. You know, bottom line, this massive bill filled with President Trump's domestic agenda is on the verge of imploding. House and Senate Republicans remain at odds over the bill's cost to the national debt and other key provisions like Medicaid cuts and tax breaks.
You know, we fought very, very, very hard to have a bill that that really gets into the direction of right-sizing government. It doesn't go enough, in my opinion, as far as making cuts, but we at least were going to pay for some of the tax cuts.
House Freedom Caucus Chair Andy Harris agreed. I spoke with him by phone after he met with Senate leadership.
The current rumored version increases the budget deficit by $1 trillion over 10 years versus the House version that was sent over there. That wasn't the deal we had agreed to.
Chairman Harris adds he and other conservative hawks are going to stand firm.
There are enough members over in the House who are going to insist on the House budget framework with regards to deficit reduction. So I think if that product came over here tonight, it would fail.
Negotiations continue over the state and local tax deduction cap, also known as SALT. The House version raises the deduction from $10,000 to $40,000, but the Senate appears poised to cut that amount. Lawmakers from California, New Jersey, and New York, states with high taxes, say the Senate version will not pass.
At the end of the day, the $10,000 number is unacceptable, and it's not something that any of us would support.
Another sticking point continues to be the Medicaid provider tax crackdown and its impact on rural hospitals. Hundreds of Medicaid supporters have filled the halls of Congress this week, voicing their opposition to the cuts.
This bill is going to hurt so many people. It's going to hurt rural communities. It's going to hurt the elderly, the disabled, people who need services like drug addiction, mental health.
Still, Senate Republicans remain optimistic.
This bill is so important. It's going to prevent the largest tax hike in history. There are so many other great things that no one's talking about. We're going to defund anyone who's doing abortions out there, taking federal funds away from people that are doing abortions.
And if that's not enough to deal with, listen to this. A Senate parliamentarian also threw a wrench into the negotiation. She ruled that a number of revenue-producing items in the package must be dropped. Senate Majority Leader John Thune intends to keep the Senate in session to get this bill across the finish line. But at this point, this massive bill is in trouble, and lawmakers may be spending the July 4th recess right here in the swamp. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, Eric, thank you. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly. It's a day the cast and crew of The Chosen are not likely to forget.
Just the kindness on his face and just a charity about him that just moved me.
Jonathan Rumi sits down with EWTN's Colin Flynn to discuss his meeting with Pope Leo XIV. Plus, a new saint is named in the Orthodox Church, and she is from America. We have the details. At least 12 people are dead after a gunman in Mexico targeted a celebration for the Nativity of St. John the Baptist. Mexico's president says an investigation is underway.
Es muy lamentable lo que ocurrió. Se está haciendo la investigación.
Claudia Sheinbaum says state and local officials are working together to find the suspects. The attack took place northwest of Mexico City. Last month, in the same state, 7 people were killed in a party organized by a local church. Hong Kong's top American diplomat says President Trump is very concerned about the case of jailed Catholic pro-democracy advocate Jimmy Lai.
The treatment of Jimmy Lai, and not just Jimmy Lai, but other political prisoners. President Trump himself has mentioned Jimmy Lai several times now, and he is very concerned about the fate of Mr. Lai. But I just emphasize that U.S. government concern is not just on this one individual. There are many other people, unfortunately, in Hong Kong who are in jail for peaceful expression of political views.
Jimmy Lai is currently fighting national security charges, which could result in life in prison. A native of Alaska known as Everybody's Helper is the Orthodox Church's first female North American saint. Several bishops joined hundreds of pilgrims in a canonization ceremony in a remote village in southwest Alaska. Saint Olga was the wife of an Orthodox priest and the mother of 13 children. She was known for her service and compassion, particularly to women who suffered abuse. After her death in 1979, women reported seeing visions of Olga, providing a healing presence of the traumas they experienced. Says one Orthodox leader, Saint Olga is a reminder that the same path of holiness is available to all, male or female, young or old, rich or poor. The cast and crew of a wildly popular TV series depicting the life of Christ is in Rome this week. It is part of the European debut of The Chosen Season 5. Among the highlights so far was an audience with Pope Leo XIV. EWTN News foreign correspondent Colin Flynn sat down with the actor who plays Jesus.
He hadn't seen the show that I'm on, but his brother was a fan of it, and so he's like, he knew of the show, and I said, well, we brought some DVDs to help remedy that.
Were you like,
situation.
Do you have a DVD player in there, or do you want me to hook one up? Or?
For the cast of the TV show The Chosen, it was a moment they will never forget.
Just the kindness on his face and just a charity about him that just moved me. It was really, it was overwhelming at first and just really, really excited. I didn't think I would get to meet him this soon.
And a privilege not even major Hollywood blockbuster films would get. A private screening of their new season in the Vatican Cinema. And actor Jonathan Rumi, who portrays Jesus Christ, says while he feels unworthy, believes that he was chosen for this role for a reason.
I believe, and I still believe, that God gave me certain gifts to use, to share with the world, and specifically to glorify his name in some way. And until I realized that, I didn't really have success. And once I committed my career to him and in doing so, the entirety of my life, that's when my life changed.
The popularity of the show is staggering. The historical drama based on the life of Jesus Christ, told through the eyes of those closest to him, has so far been watched by over 280 million viewers in 175 countries.
We have a problem. Jesus operates entirely outside our jurisdiction.
And what started as a humble crowd-funded project by Christian filmmakers has gripped audiences around the world.
At the beginning that a third of the audience is non-Catholic, non-religious even.
The show attracts believers, yes, but also non-believers, which its creator and director, Dallas Jenkins, puts down to the compelling storytelling and characters.
It contains moments from history and moments even from art that people all over the world know, even if they don't fully know the story or even if they are not believers.
And even though the show has gained huge success and critical acclaim, Dallas Jenkins says that he was about to quit the film business just before The Chosen.
8 years ago, in 2017, I realized I might never make another movie or TV show again. And I got to a place where I was okay with that, as long as God's will was being done. And when I was ready to give it all up, I think that's when God said, now you're ready for The Chosen. And so now that I look back on that, I'm like, I can't believe that we're here, that we have gone this far, considering where I was at a low point in 2017.
Then we get to season 5, the most tumultuous week of Jesus's life.
Which tells the story of Jesus's final week on earth and what many believe was the most influential week in human history. The overturning of the tables at the temple, the jealousy and the struggle for power, the confusion felt by the apostles, and the betrayal.
How will you escape being condemned to hell?
What have you done?
Looking back on everything that The Chosen has represented for the viewers, for you, for the cast, the crew, what are you most proud of when you look back at this incredible project so far, yet to be completed?
The reality of what it's doing for people, the reality of how God is using it to encounter people that even previously had no relationship with him whatsoever. I mean, what's better than that?
The Chosen, Season 5, is on Amazon Prime now. At the Vatican in Rome, Colm Flynn for EWTN News Nightly.
And up next on EWTN News Nightly, 350 years ago, a nun receives a vision of Christ that would change the course of church history. Can you guess the popular devotion it started? We have the answer. The church celebrates the 350th anniversary of the apparitions of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. The devotion has spread from France to the rest of the world, but Rome is home to the first international shrine dedicated to the Sacred Heart. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Settergren has more.
350 years ago, in the small town of Paray-le-Monial in central France,
Jesus revealed his sacred heart to Saint Marguerite Marie Alacoque and invited all to respond to the love of a heart wounded by human ingratitude.
He expressed his sorrow because this heart, which loves the world so much, which loves humanity so deeply, so often receives the opposite in return, sins, offenses, and above all, he said, from us, from priests, from religious, from consecrated souls. And he asked her specifically to make reparation for this offense. How? Through prayer.
To anyone devoted to his sacred heart, Jesus made several promises of deep graces, including peace in their homes, strength in life's trials, and comfort in sorrow. Above all, he promised his help at the hour of death and the gift of final perseverance. Quickly, churches and altars were constructed across the world in honor of the Sacred Heart, including in Rome.
With this devotion, the first church to the Sacred Heart of Jesus in Rome was built with the intention that, from here, the center of Christianity, this devotion could be spread throughout the whole world.
Following the death of Pope Blessed Pius IX, Pope Leo XIII quickly took over the project to build the Basilica in Rome. After entrusting the work to St. John Bosco, who raised funds across Europe to help build the Basilica, Pope Leo XIII continued to promote the devotion throughout his papacy. He elevated the Feast of the Sacred Heart to a solemnity, approved its litany, and in 1899 he consecrated the entire Church and humanity to the Sacred Heart, a historic act he called the Church's greatest hope for the salvation of the world and for leading restless hearts to the love of God.
As St. Augustine often said, we go wandering here and there, searching to satisfy our hearts. But our hearts will never be satisfied until they come to understand, even just a little, how much God loves us.
In Rome, Benedictia de Grian, EWTN News Nightly.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tara Mergener. Good night, and God bless.